Monday the 31st of December, Rabbi Joseph Freider, Insights from the Market.
Good morning, everybody. This is a special day. We are actually doing two things today. We are starting the day the Torah way, and we're finishing the year the Torah way. I think this is a great skula for Arichas Yomim Rishonim. Now, I'd like to take this opportunity on this special day to make an appeal. I'm not appealing for money. That would have been easy. I'm appealing for you to make a New Year's resolution. What is the New Year's resolution? You've just come in time for the appeal. I'm appealing for a New Year's resolution for people to learn Chumash. I find that people somehow don't learn Chumash. Yeah, they learn Chumash Rashi, Vada, but Chumash they don't learn. What's Chumash Rashi? Chumash Rashi means you read through the Pasuk, you skim it through, and you look what's up Rashi, you look in the Rashi, and you start going into the Rashi, where does Rashi get this from, how does he know it, why does he say it, isn't this a stealer to what Rashi says somewhere else? And you go in, you examine the Rashi back to front, and then you finish the Rashi, okay, finish the Rashi, you go weiter. But there are many things in the Pasuk that you haven't noticed at all that Rashi doesn't comment on. Rashi only comments on one or two things in the Pasuk. There are many things in every Pasuk that Rashi doesn't talk about, and you possibly haven't noticed them in the Pasuk. You might even find that you can't even translate the Pasuk properly. And you just go weiter. Sometimes you read a Pasuk, you look at Rashi, oh, no Rashi in this Pasuk, weiter, let's go on to the next Pasuk. And yeah, the Torah itself, you know, is Torah, when that was Bekeren's obvious, you know, it's just discarded. I remember Rabbi Sassoon was talking, he said, you know, the Chumash, he said to someone, it's a good book, it's worth reading. You know? It's worth, you know, making a little bit of effort to try to learn the Chumash. And many years ago, when I was, even when I think I was in Yeshiva and Gateshead at the time, I decided on a method. Everybody can work out his own method for learning Chumash. But I decided on the following method. I'll put it to you and you can take it on or develop a better method. I don't mind, as long as you keep to the resolution. Yes? So my method was that you learn through a parsha of Chumash and then you go back and you look at each posuk, you know, very, very carefully. And you see, is there anything unusual in this pasuk? Is there something linguistic? The words a bit unusual? The grammar is a bit unusual? The pasuk simply repeats what it said three psukim earlier? There's some philosophical problem about the pasuk? An ethical problem about the pasuk? A stira between this pasuk and another pasuk, parent stira? There's so many things. See how much you can notice, any observations you can make on a pasuk, and jot them down on a piece of paper. I think you find on an average, you find about 6 observations that you should be able to make if you've got your eyes open. On every pasuk, you have 6 observations. Then you look at your observations, and you then, you might notice sort of just something, not a casual, something interesting. Oh, look at that, this is unusual. And then you try to put some significance to that observation. What does this mean? What does this signify? What's the meaning behind it? And try, think about it a little bit, and very often with a little bit of thought, it doesn't take too much thought, you say, oh, I see the process, oh, this is wonderful thought, and you come out with a new chiddush. And that's how you make chiddushim. All the Torah mitzvahs, to make chiddushim, you've got to go through 2 stages. You've got to make an observation, and then you've got to attach a significance to that observation. Sometimes you don't see the significance. I've got many very fascinating observations which I've made in Psukim which stand out. I haven't yet discovered the significance, but at least I've made the observation. So you've got it there on paper and you look at it. Then after that, after you've done that and you've tried, you've exhausted your own mind and you can't think of any more, you can't think of any answers to any difficulties or anything else, so then you can say, okay, now let's have a look and see what the Mephoshim say. And then you see the Mefoshim in a different light. You look at the Rashi, you say, ah, with that little Rashi, it's for the third point, which I discovered. And then you find a Medrash maybe, this Medrash actually sheds light on this and this. That you've got to first ask your questions or make your observations on the Pasuk, think about the Pasuk. Maybe translate it, so many psukim that you can't even translate properly, you know, till you become, if you become a teacher in a school and you've got to teach children, and then you've got to start sitting there, Tata, what does this Pasuk mean? What is Taich? That's sometimes the first time you've been in yeshiva for years and you don't know Taich. But, you know, in that way, you know, it gives you a focus and then you can get into it. And there's so many droshes that you go to. I mean, you listen to droshes at Chasaners, at Sheva Brochers. Pasuk says this, it's up to Medrash, straight away you're into it. Nobody ever talks about what the Torah means. What's wrong with the Torah, you know? Straight away into the Medrash, and there's enough of Medrash, and Yalkut, and this and that. You know, the Torah itself isn't, it's a good book worth reading. I remember the late Rabbi Yitzchak Bernstein used to be very keen on learning Chumash. And he used to sit in the yeshiva. I remember once I was sitting in the yeshiva once in the middle of the afternoon and everybody was doing Kasar of the Gemara. And he was sitting there learning Chumash. And the Mashgiach, you know, sort of was walking up and down, and he sees Bernstein sort of learning Chumash in the middle of the afternoon Seder. And he says, what's Ledman do? And he says, if you knew Bernstein, he said, Ich lerne Chedushe Horeboine Shalom al Hashas. So, let's have a look at the psukim in this week's Seder. This week's Seder, we make a start to the matters. Now, we ask ourselves in the first place, why did the Rabbanu Shel Olam bring matters on the Mitzrayim? What's the question? Why? Now, the first thing that comes to mind is, of course, to tighten the screw on Paro and to force him to let the Bnei Yisrael go. That is the first primary reason. But I found when you look through the psukim carefully, you'll find four reasons altogether. Clearly in the psukim, why the Rabbanu Shel Olam brought the Makkos. One of the main reasons was in order to impress upon Paro and the Egyptians that I am the Rabbanu Shel Olam. Right? You look at the psukim so many times, L'man teda ki ani Hashem, L'man teda ki ein kamayni b'chol ha'aretz, loads of psukim of that nature. Right? Rabbanu Shel Olam, in order to force Paro, Rabbanu Shel Olam could have killed Paro straight away, wouldn't have been hard for Rabbanu Shel Olam to do that. Right? But he wanted to teach Paro a lesson, who is the Rabbanu Shel Olam in this world? And this was a very difficult lesson to teach Paro. We just think, Paro, yeah, stickle me sugar, now you hit him, he doesn't take any notice, you do it again and again and again. Paro, he was the ruler of the most advanced culture in the world at the time, of the most powerful culture. Egypt was the most powerful nation in the world. And this great, powerful nation, he is at the top. What he says goes. Any orders that he gives, have somebody killed, have somebody executed, have somebody thrown into slavery, whatever he says, happens. So after time, when you get into that, you really feel, I am sitting at the top of the pyramid, I am not the managing director of the world, I'm the ruler of the universe. I am God himself. I mean, we see in the Drashim say, Paro thought he was a god. I'm sure he thought he was God. Yeah, if you were Paro and that's it, and you have all that power, and nobody could ever contradict you or argue with you, then you attack and think, you know, attack, I'm God, I'm the top of the world. So, Rabbanu Shel Olam had to teach him that he wasn't on the top of the world, that the Rabbanu Shel Olam is on the top of the world. And this was a very, very difficult lesson for Paro to learn. And we see, as you go through the psukim, tremendous reluctance on the part of Paro to give up his status, and once you've been a god, you know, to get demoted and just to be an only Paro is not an easy thing to accept. And he held on to his position as tightly as he could. Now, the purpose, as I say, the second purpose of the matters was to impress the Egyptians about who was the real Rabbanu Shel Olam. And the Egyptians consisted of three sections. And as you, again, when you learn the psukim and you think of the psukim, you notice this again and again and again, there are three separate sections. Every time, there's Parai, that is Avodim, his ministers, his advisors, the people at the top echelon, the cabinet, and then there's a whole Am, the Mitzriim, Amcho. And every time, you know, it says, Avo Beveischo, Beveis Avadecho, over Amcho. You know, you find that over a dozen times in the Torah, every time there's deal over Cho, over Amcho, over Chol Avadecho, Yalu Atzavadim. You know, every time, the Yosef, Orev, Miparo, Meavodov, and Meamoi, every time those three groups, right, and one or two occasions one of those groups is missing, and if you're learning Chumash, like you're going to do from now on, Yetz Hashem, yeah, then you'll notice, oh, there's something missing here. Right? So they're very interesting, even at the very end, when people see Taka Moshe's greatness, and they're impressed with Moshe, and the end it says, well, Ish Moshe, Godel Ma'oi, Be'enei Abdi, Paro, Ve'enei Ho'om. You know, it's a nice passage, you read, just read it through like that. If you read through carefully, wait a minute, is there something missing? That Ish Moshe, Godel Ma'oi, Be'enei Abdi, Paro, Ve'enei Ho'om. Where's the third one? Huh? Paro himself. For Paro to admit that Moshe is greater than he is, that Moshe is representing a power that's greater than he is, Paro should, even towards the end, he just couldn't get himself, everybody else, even if Avodim, and then he said, look, this man will give in, you know, Admosai, you know, can't you see, you know, but Paro himself, you know, couldn't give in, even at the very end, you know, he couldn't let go. So I would say, if you look carefully at the Psukkim, you notice all these little things, and you see straight away the significance of it, Paro is left out. So you can see that a person of Paro's position, if Moshe Rabbeinu, you know, we think that the Kodesh Boker told Moshe, go in to tell Paro, tell him that Ribbono Shel Olam said he's got to let B'nai Yisrael go, and you'll have Paro sitting in his boots. No, think of the reality of it. Here's this Paro, who he is tops, and then this Moshe Rabbeinu has got to come in. It's the most scary thing. Moshe Rabbeinu has got to come into him and say, I'm coming in the name of Hashem, and he's telling you, you've got to let the B'nai Yisrael go. Excuse me? You're telling me something that I've got to do? I've never heard of such a thing. Nobody's ever been in my palace and told me what to do. Who is this God? Me, Hashem, Asher Eshma B'chol. Who is this Hashem that you're talking about? That Eshma B'chol, that somebody who I've got to listen to? Everybody listens to me. I don't listen to anybody. There's no sort of being in this world. Me, Hashem, Asher Eshma B'chol. And he says at second point, Lo Yedati's Hashem. I don't even know. I've never even heard of there. There might be other gods around, but the other inferior gods, but I don't have to listen. I'm the supreme. Right? But this God, I've never even heard of his name. Lo Yedati's Hashem. I haven't heard of his name. I think the Medrash says that he checked in the whole register of gods. You know, he looked him up. Excuse me, I've looked him up on the internet and the whole looked him up empty of gods. You know, he's not there. He doesn't exist. Who is Hashem? Right? So Lo Yedati's Hashem. The Gamas B'nai Yisrael, La Shalea. Not furthermore, even if I would know who Hashem is, are you mad? Are you out of your mind? I've got a workforce here of 600,000 people doing tremendous work for me. I should let them go. You're out of your mind. Get out of here. So, you know, it was, we've got to sort of see it in its right proportion. So, as we go through the matters, you know, one by one, there's such a lot to talk about. Indeed, there isn't much time, but we can just sort of pick out one or two things. We find the Makkah of Dam. Right? Okay, all the water turned into blood. So what did Paro do? He called his wise men, and he says, you know, see if you can emulate this trick. Yeah? They took some water, and it also turned into blood. Right? Now, you know, we would think, Meshugana, you know, water is so precious, you know, you need water, you know. If you've got a little bit of water left, you know, don't ruin that water as well. But they're prepared to suffer even more. They're prepared to have the bit of water whatever which we've got from somewhere or other. They're prepared to turn that into blood in order not to have to give in and admit to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. No, this is nothing. You think you've got a Kodesh, you impressed me with your tricks that you can do. We can do exactly the same thing. I can be worse, but we've got more blood in the place. Doesn't matter. We are prepared to suffer as long as we don't have to give in and accept that you're special God. comes the Maggot of Tzvadeya, they're the same thing. Chatumim came, and they also brought out Tzvadeya. I mean, you've got the place full of Tzvadeya. You bring out more Tzvadeya. I mean, who needs more Tzvadeya? If you want to show that you're big Chochum, show that you can take away the Tzvadeya, show that you can turn the blood back into water. That would be a sensible trick to do. You can turn water, but we'll show we can do that. But no, we can do exactly the same as your Hashem can do, and we don't mind suffering even more and having more Tzvadim as long as we don't have to give in to you. And even at the end, when he says, please take away, okay, we've had enough of these, please take away the Tzvadim, we can't stand them anymore. So Moshe Rabbeinu says, "Lemosai at elachor." For when do you want me? You want me to ask the Kodesh Baruch Hu to take them away? For when shall I get them to take them away? So he says, "Okay, ask for tomorrow." It's an amazing thing. He's prepared. I remember when I was in my younger years. You probably have the same experience. And when we went anywhere on a journey with our children on a train. No, it was always a whole tedious sort of business. The kids got bored. They had to keep on finding ways to amuse the kids on the train and keep them occupied. And I said, you know what I can do? You know, the train came into a station, stopped, you know, said, come on, when is the train moving? I said, look, I can make the train move. There's a little button here on the side over the window. It used to have a strap that you could pull the window up and on that. You remember those days? And a little button that the hole went into. I said, I know how to press this button and I can make the whole train move. Really? And I waited. He used to have the fella, you know, used to, when he was ready to go, he used to blow his whistle to attract the attention of the engine driver. And when he looked out, and sort of 3 seconds later, he waved his flag and then the thing. And so, you know, as soon as I heard him say, as soon as he blew the whistle, I said, right, when shall I make the train go? I said, I'll make it go right now. I said, right. And I pressed the button, and slowly the train pulled out of the station. Wow, that is so clever. And I thought to myself, you know, if my children, when they're grown up a little bit further, if they say, okay, make the train go in 2 minutes' time, I'll fall flat on my face. So, you know, Paro says to make it, you want it to Tzvadim, when shall Tzvadim go away? Probably this man Moshe, he knows the weather conditions and the things, you know, certain weather brings the frogs, certain way it takes them away, wind, whatever, he probably knows that they're going to go away now, and he thinks I'm going to say, oh, please take them away, stay away. No, tomorrow. So it means I'm prepared to suffer these Tzvadim as much. I'm begging you to take them away, but I'm prepared to suffer another day of Tzvadim as long as I don't have to give in to you. I mean, it's a moedik akshonus that we see on the part of Parad, how human beings, how akshonus they can be. On the other hand, what we learn from these matters is we see HaKadosh Baruch Hu's attitude. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has got this tremendous Erech HaPayim, this tremendous Chesed. HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't want to knock Paro on the head. We have this principle. The Navi says, Kila Echpais B'moisa Meis Kim B'shuva Medrocho V'medrach V'choyo. I am not interested that the Rishon should die. I could wipe them all out. There's no Chochmah to wipe them out. The Chochmah is, and that's what I want them to recognize the Emes and to realize, you know, Taka, Kodesh Baruch Hu is Emes, and we have to come to a Hakoro. That's more important to me than to kill them. For Kodesh Baruch Hu, to kill somebody else, it's no Chochmah. You don't have to be a big Chochum. You can kill the biggest person you have, than the Buddha. You know, I mean, a greater thinker, whatever, in her field, you know, big, you know, moist nefesh for her country and all that, and some shmerel, you know, take a gun, you pull a trigger, and then you put an end to her, you know. That's not the chokhmah, you know, to kill people. And that's not what the Kodesh Baruch Hu wants. The Kodesh Baruch Hu would rather wait a time and try to get him to understand. And so many of the matters, when we think about it, it's not to go against Paro, but to try to help Paro. Okay? Just to take an example. You know, it's Tzvadim. I mean, we're talking about it's Tzvadim, so let's stick to that for the moment. The Tzvadim came, it says they came into your houses, they came into your dining room, they went up to your bedroom, they went into the bed, Chadam Ishkofcho, uvisanu recho uvimisharo secho, and into your ovens and into your dough. Now, what does the Kodesh Baruch Hu do all that for? Okay, it's a nuisance having frogs all over your house. You're going to the dining room, there's frogs jumping around everywhere. It's not very pleasant. You've got frogs coming up into your bedroom. That's really, it's really unpleasant. They're having it in your bed. As you get into your bed, you find something cold is tickling your toe. You know, it's really, really not pleasant. And you hear a wife screaming and jumping out of bed, you know. That's my mamish. You can't live with that. So, you know, the Chadamish Kofam, it does that, you know, that's bad enough. I remember, so again, years ago, I think back when our children were small. I remember one night, you know, I suddenly heard a scream coming from one of the children's bedrooms. I jumped out of bed, I ran into the bedroom. What's the matter? There's a frog in my bed. I said, don't be saying there's no frog, you just imagine. Yeah, there's a frog in my bed. And I had to switch on the lights, I had to take off all the covers, I had to take off the pillows, I had to show him, look, there's no frog here, you just dreamt it. Probably, it was probably the said, he was probably lying to do that. You dreamt it, you know, look, you can see, there's nothing here at the pad. I'm sure we've all been through this. Pacify him, go back to sleep, and let me go back to sleep. So, you know, he finally went back to sleep, and I went back into my bed. And I remember, as I got back into bed, I thought to myself, if an imaginary frog can cause such a lot of distress, so how much distress is caused by real frogs if you pack a hat frog in your bed? You know? How much distress is caused? So if a Kodesh Baruch Hu wants to give Parrotsaurus, if he wants to sort of put the pressure on him, twist his arm, you know, having frogs in your bed, that's enough, you know. So to go and say the frogs went into your cupboard, the frogs went into the oven, you know, what do you need these additional things for? And, you know, as you read the Pasuk, you know, you see Patanu Recho, and with our new system now that we're learning Chumash, you know, you think about it, what do you have staff with us home, you know, that they go into the oven, okay, it's not a thing, and they go into your bread, and then when you do Lecha Mishnah, you're nice, you know, go past the squelchy, you know, thing, okay, but, you know, it's just, you know, what do you need this additional thing for? And I thought about it, and I thought, Baruch Hashem was doing tremendous chesed with Paroi. Paro can't get himself to realize that there's something higher than he is. So Kodesh Baruch Hu makes these frogs go into the oven. Now, the frogs come into the houses and go into the dining room. You say, listen, it sometimes happens that frogs come out of the river. That's the conditions. I mean, I've been sometimes out in the country. You go to the country at Southampton, you find frogs jumping around in the fields. You know, it can happen. So there's a lot of frogs, so they come into the houses. You know, listen, it's not a sham, it's nothing. It's no great power. Don't impress me, you know. It's simply, you know, the frogs are there. It's a natural phenomenon. So Kodesh Baruch Hu shows him all these frogs, a whole lot of frogs, are going to walk into your oven. Now, that's something that's not natural. No frog in his normal mind would walk into an oven. Right? It could be you're having an odd frog that's been a bit nebuchadnezzar, not broken head or something, been injured a bit, and it's jumping and it doesn't know where it's going and walks in the oven. But they're all walking into the oven. All the frogs walking into the oven. It's like an army. And it's not just me, I'd tell to my neighbour, how are things with you? Oh, terrible. All frogs are walking into my oven in the whole midstime. Frogs are walking into the oven. Now that's something, it's not just Mesidus Nefesh, you know, if somebody blows himself up, you know, you take it, you pull the trigger and you're dead and it's finished. But to walk into an oven, you know, it's almost impossible, you know, the heat that's coming out of an oven, you know, as you're coming nearer, the heat gets more and more and more intense, you know, you're different background here, you can't just carry on walking like that. You know, even you know, it goes against, it's counterintuitive, it goes against the deepest natural feelings, the deepest instinct in every living creature is that preservation. So you don't go further, you know, even a mother who's got a deep instinct for her children, if Chassav Shom is a fire and now you've got to run back into the house and save a child, then sometimes the heat is too intense and you're driven back, you can't keep walking into it, it's hotter and hotter and hotter. And here, these frogs are walking into the ovens. Now, for a frog to walk into an oven means that he's going against his own nature, there must be some outside force that's driving it to walk against its nature, to walk into the oven.
That's why the
and with this outside force, is driving them in. So this is, and Moshe Rabbeinu told me the other day that the Kodesh Baruch Hu is going to do all this. He said beforehand, they're going to come into your rooms and they will go into your ovens. So he knows, so it's his Hashem that's doing this. He's doing this. And this Hashem is doing something which I can't do. You know, I can kill any number of people. I can throw people into prison. But I cannot, even the great para, I couldn't get a group of frogs to walk into an oven. I'm not able to do that. It's beyond my power. And this is something which is being done. This force of Hashem is doing something which I can't do. So I've got to sit up and I've got to think and I've got to realize, Takir, you know, there is a Takir Hashem. So this Makir, it's not to hurt para, it's to help para recognize the emes, see, you know, what a Kodesh Baruch Hu can do. He can do things that you can't do. And we're not talking about killing, because killing anybody can do. So he doesn't want to kill you, he wants you to see the emes. So you say, there's a lot, again we're sort of very short of time, but let me sort of pick out sort of something from the end of the Seder then. Sort of at the end of the Seder, it says that Kodesh Baruch Hu sent the Makor Borod. And he's laid back about it. He said, you know, I'll give you some advice. Take all your animals indoors, then they'll be safe from the Borod. Now, which enemy general will give you advice as what to do? But Kodesh Baruch Hu, he shows how aloof he is. He's so higher, I can afford to give you advice how to escape from my Borod. You want to escape from my Borod? Because I'm going to bring Borod. You want to escape from it? Go inside the house. Take your animals inside the house, and then you'll be safe from the Borod. And they are so determined, we don't want to give in, we don't want your advice, you know, we're not afraid of your Borod, we're not scared of your Borod. That Taka, there was a group of people who were afraid, Hayoriz Dabar Hashem, they brought it in. They weren't afraid of Hashem, right? Because we're now learning the Psukim and we're reading every word. It doesn't say Hayoriz Hashem, Hayoriz Dabar Hashem, right? The word of Hashem, Hashem's words were that there's going to be a Borod. Okay, that we are afraid of. Right? So they say, no, but there was a whole other section that said, no, we don't care. We are going to, you know, leave them out. We're not scared of a Kodesh Baruch Hu. I mean, the action is more than they can, how action a human being can get. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu sends the Borod, and it does all sorts of damage. And then, in the end, Para comes along. We know the whole story. He says, please, you know, ask the Kodesh Baruch Hu to take away the Borod. This time I promise, I'll keep my promise. And he says, Vayetze Moshe im Paroim Esu'ir Vayifras Kapov El Hashem, lifted his hands to Hashem, Vayaktelu HaKoilos V'Haborod V'Motol HaNitach Otsu. The Koilos, again you see the Koilos are always the first thing, the thunder, the clap, that's the thing that really was the most scary. So the koilos stopped, and the borod and the motel and the hail didn't come down to the ground. Now what does it mean, it didn't come down to the ground? So Rashi explains, and he says, it didn't reach the ground. At oysim shehoye ve'avir, lo higia le'oritz. The hailstones which were in the air didn't come around, they stayed in midair. So what's the Kodesh Baruch Hu showing them? HaKadosh wants to show them something. He says, look, you can make more dam, you make more tzufadeah, kinim, you like you couldn't do more, but you can make more trouble. No, troublemakers are never short of that. Those are people who rather can make trouble, cause disruption, cause it out. To do something good is far harder. He says, I am able to take away the makkas, and I've got absolute control. But here is a hailstone flying down, coming down, and you want to stop at it, stop! And the hailstone will stop in midair. I've got absolute control over my matters. You know, if you think, you know, of when they dropped the first atomic bomb over Hiroshima, you know, could you imagine the pilots in that plane, you know, the ones that pulled the lever and they dropped the bomb out, and as the bombers fly down, say, what have you done? We've dropped an atomic bomb on the whole city of Hiroshima, thousands of people. Oh, no, I don't want it. No, please take it back. You know, you've got, it's out of your power. It's falling down to the ground now. You've got the most powerful, you're so powerful, you can make an atomic bomb, you can create the destruction. But stop it! No, I can't, and now it's out of my hand, it's on its way down, I can't stop anymore. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has got this absolute power, right? It can be on its way to the ground, stop, and it'll stop in mid-air. This is the great power. Right? And most people, I remember even when Einstein developed his formula of E equals MC squared, you know, that he could create energy out of matter, and this was the basis on which the atomic bomb was built. When he found out to what use they were putting his great discovery, their formula, he said, I don't want them to look this, I don't want people to use my formula. He could shout his head off, nobody took any notice of him. Once he'd made this discovery, once it was out, he had no more control over it. You know, and even good things, you find Rosh Yeshivas who build up Yeshiva, then they build it up, they get Rosh Yeshivas, they get Magid Shia, they have a committee that's really growing, and after time it's out of their hands, they've got no more control over it. Right? The Boshim have that absolute control. This is Shod Para. I am the one. I'm in control. And if you want to look after your interest, you've got to turn to me, and you've got to make your peace with me, and you've got to give in to me. But it was still a long time, and Paro, the people already gave in, the Avodim gave in, the Paro, till the end, you know, he still rushed forward. This is, see, on one hand we see from the matters the nature of human beings and the actioners, and the other hand we see the Gvantike Chesed of the Reboi Nishalayim, and the Kael Erech HaPayim, how long he's prepared to have patience with us. He wants it, he's begging us to see the Emes. That's the difference between the Reboi Nishalayim and us. So I wish you well in the coming year with your new resolution, and Mir Hashem, you should have a hatzlofa in the learning of the Chumash.